You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Curtain up, theater people, and welcome to Your Program Is Your Ticket, coming to you from the Hell's Kitchen area of Midtown Manhattan, right smack dab in the middle of Broadway. My name is Sean Chandler, and I'll be your host. Your Program Is Your Ticket is a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make it happen. As many of you might know, Your Program Is Your Ticket is a helpful system where your program is literally your ticket to get into the theater in smaller, more intimate productions, usually to save money and resources. It's these works that we like to highlight, and it's our goal in this show to feature as many of these productions as possible while still discussing the biggies. I love theater and see as much as I can wherever I go. During the travels of the production of my husband and my play At the Flash, I've met many wonderful people from all over the world in the theater community, and it is my honor to bring them on as guests to the show. Tonight's guest will be Executive Director of New York Theater Experience and an incredible force in the digital publication of great new works through Indie Theater Now, the wonderful Martin Denton. We'll be bringing Martin on in just a few minutes, but first, I'd like to bring to light a certain set of opportunities that some theater newbies out there might like to entertain. They're called out-of-town tryouts, and out-of-town tryouts are a great opportunity to see up-and-coming shows, often at a smaller scale as they evolve into larger Broadway shows they are destined to become. These are typically shows that have some heat behind them producer-wise, which usually means interest and also money. And they have the potential for the big time, but the producers don't necessarily want to work out the kinks of the show in front of a critical New York audience, so they produce a short run of the show at a theater elsewhere, usually somewhere in the United States, sometimes internationally. You can see these shows typically for less cost than what you might pay on Broadway. And what's cool about it is that you can say that you've seen the show during its creative evolution. Some of the shows that I've seen on out-of-town tryouts are 9 to 5, the musical, which ran its out-of-town tryout, I believe it was at the Amelie Theater in Los Angeles. And recently, Amelie the Musical, which is scheduled to open out here in New York, did a run in L.A. as well. Saw the out-of-town tryout for Waitress in Boston. I love Waitress the Musical. It's so good. And then also, a lot of stuff comes from Chicago with out-of-town tryouts. Saw Kinky Boots there back in, I think it was 2012 when we were producing At the Flash there. Also Beautiful, the Carole King musical originated there. And I love that show. I believe it originated out of the Goodman Theater. It had its out-of-town tryout there. And the Goodman produces so much great work in Chicago. And most recently, I believe the Goodman produced War Paint, which is a musical that's coming here in New York with Patti LuPone and Christine Ebersole as Helena Rubinstein, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, sorry about that, and Elizabeth Arden, who were dueling cosmetic entrepreneurs. And that just sounds like a lot of fun. I really want to see that. I love both of those actresses. So I encourage you to keep an eye on the theater scene in your area. If you live in someplace a little more rural, you know, look up the big city that's next to you and look out for these shows for their out-of-town tryouts. It's a great way to see up-and-coming shows, and it's really educational because you get to watch the creative process as a smaller, less evolved production evolves upward. I love doing this. Sometimes I will actually like take a train or fly someplace just to see an out-of-town tryout because, well, for a couple of reasons, mostly because I want to see it and learn what they're doing and then maybe match the two shows up as they come to Broadway. And sometimes they don't go to Broadway and I just want to see it because I'm interested in in the show itself or the talent that's involved, the writer or the actors that are in the show. I mean, that's just it's really fun. So I know a lot of people out there who are big theater peeps know about this, but if you're listening to the show and you're new, then this is something I've made people who aren't necessarily super involved in theater aware of, and they've gone and they've really had a good time doing it. So I would encourage you to do that. And also, it's a good support system for them, because they're in essence bouncing the ideas for their show off of you and getting your response.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
So, anyways, now I would like to introduce our guest. As I indicated earlier, he is the executive director of New York Theater Experience and a major, what I would consider, game changer in the digital publication of great new works through Indie Theater Now, the prolific and obviously omnipotent Martin Benton. Hi, Martin, and welcome to your program, Mr. Ticket.
Hi, Sean. Thank you for having me here. I'm very excited, and I'm actually not omnipotent.
It feels like you are. You have such a broad range of influence over how theater is produced. I just think that you're marvelous in what you do. My relationship with Martin is that Indie Theater Now actually does an annual series of selected plays from the New York Fringe Festival, and our play At the Flash was one of the plays that was selected, and it was such a wonderful honor. I was just like so blown away by that, and now I'm like, now I can tell everyone I've been digitally published, and that's such a cool thing. So, Martin, tell us a little bit about yourself and your creative theater passion.
Well, I have been working in the theater in the New York Theater Experience for actually 20 years now. Before that, I was in the world of business, and I actually have a degree in accounting. And I've never done theater. I never was a performer or a writer or a director or anything like that, except in the most amateur way. But I always loved theater. It was always sort of the thing that I loved to do and a place where I loved to go to find out more things about the world and about myself. And that's still true. And anyway, I started my first website in 1996, which was originally called Martin's Guide to New York Theater. And that morphed very quickly into nytheater.com. And in the late 90s, which wasn't that long ago, but it seems like eons ago in internet time, it was possible to really make a splash as one of the very few theater websites that existed in that time. And so since I was one of the first people doing this kind of thing on the internet, nytheater.com got a following pretty quickly. And within a couple of years, I was able to quit my job and move to New York and work full time at this business. Basically, nytheater.com's mission was to review theater and make theater accessible to folks all over the country. And I learned pretty quickly that the niche that I really enjoyed and made the most sense for us to pursue was what we call indie theater, which is the small shows that you're talking about in this podcast, which is great. Stuff that's under the radar, stuff that people don't know about, stuff that doesn't get covered traditionally in the big newspapers or big websites or whatever. And I was very gratified that we built an audience over the years and started a great relationship with the New York International Fringe Festival, as you mentioned, which has pretty much spanned. We're basically both the same age. Both of our organizations are 20 years old this year, and we've worked together over that time. And as you mentioned, we've tried to do as much as we can to document what's going on in the Fringe, which is a very, very important source of new work in the New York area. And things that followed over the years, we started a podcast series in the mid-2000s, which was called NY Theatercast, which was, I think, actually the first regularly scheduled podcast devoted to New York independent theater. We did that for about 8 or 9 years. In 2011, we started Indie Theater Now, which is now our main project. Indie Theater Now is a place where we digitally publish new works from the indie theater world. What's great about Indie Theater Now is that we can expand our focus from New York City to really the whole of the United States and Canada, which is really, really wonderful. And we have currently got over 1,300 plays available on the site that people can read about and then purchase and read themselves. And they're plays by people who are really, really talented, really, really smart, but for the most part are not people who are yet well-known in the mainstream, although some of them have broken through, which is great. And it's, you know, really, we view it mostly as a place where the emerging talents can start to get heard from and hopefully get some attention and get their work out there so that people can learn more about it.
That's sensational. And it's so wonderful that you have this resource for the up-and-coming writers because, as people may know, before it took practically, a miracle to get published within the theatrical community. You could either self-publish your show, which I believe has only been around for, I don't know, 10, 15 years. I'm not really sure. But or you'd have to wait for it to climb the ranks of the theater boards here in New York and bring on one of the bigger companies like Samuel French. Do you find that's a common theme or something that you hear a lot?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically why we started what we did. I really left out of my little narrative something important, which was that in 2000, we started publishing hard copy anthologies of plays. And it was really basically just came out of my frustration of getting to see and know some of the really wonderful work that was just being totally ignored by the theater publishing companies. And it's purely an economic thing. I mean, I don't think that companies like Samuel French don't want to expand theater art, but they are limited in their economic resources, and especially when it was all a print world, and print is way more expensive than digital publishing, obviously. So there was really almost nothing being published from the indie theater world at the turn of this century, and we changed that by publishing our plays and playwrights anthologies, which we did every year, and those anthologies, you know, again, introduced a lot of important talent, and I'm gonna now blow my horn a little bit because one of the people that we published for the first time in our 2007 volume was Taylor Mack, who we read today, just won the Kennedy Prize for Drama in American History, and I'm real proud of Taylor because we had him first, and now he is certainly making a splash in the dramatic world, and that's great, and hopefully others will publish him now, but it was important for him to get published by somebody first, and that's what we're here to do.
Yeah, I saw that today. That's incredible. And what a wonderful thing to be part of his earlier development.
Yes, it was really gratifying. I mean, it was he has come such a long way. I mean, I actually knew him before. He was an actor in the John Cocteau Repertory in New York before he started to do his own performance work. And ever really a fine actor, but just you know, you wouldn't know him from the Taylor that he is now when he was just sort of this repertory actor, a very fine one, but unassuming and, you know, just doing what he was told by the director. And now he's got his whole persona and performance thing going, and he's just phenomenal.
That is so awesome. That's wonderful. So you've been doing this for, geez, 2 decades.
Yeah.
Do you have anything that you consider to be your forte, your specialty?
I think that what I have learned or learned about myself and then, you know, what I've over the years developed is mainly, I think, Jelly, maybe there's two things. One is we worked hard to try to build community among artists, which is really important and I think harder and harder. Social media actually makes that harder than it used to be. It used to be that we all had to meet in person once in a while, and it was easy to build a community. But now that we can just Facebook each other, we go our own ways a lot more. But we tried to bring artists together and foster collaboration and just foster, you know, exchange of ideas. I mean, one of the things that I'm really proud of over the years is that we've had a couple – our organization sponsored a couple of convocations. We call them the Indie Theater Convocations, where we brought together – artists and producers from the indie theater world who we knew but who didn't know each other, who would never have had a chance to meet each other if we hadn't brought them together into a room and talked to them and gotten them to exchange ideas. And out of that, out of the convocations came the League of New York Theater, which is the sort of trade association or professional organization for indie theater producers and artists in New York City. And then the Lit Fund, which came out of that, which is a 501c3 grant-making organization that provides emergency funding and other kinds of funding for indie theater artists, sort of filling a niche that has been much needed. And I'm really happy that that started all basically in a meeting that we called. And I guess the other thing that I really have learned about myself that I'm good at is just trying to be a good theater goer. I've been to the theater, I mean, I don't go as much now, but in my reviewing heyday, I went 6 times a week at least. And so I saw literally thousands of shows over a couple of decades. And you do learn how to watch theater better. And the important thing is to really be, I think the right word is a mindful theater goer, to try to make sure that people, that you hear what the artists are telling you, that you aren't trying to second guess it or trying to impose anything on it or being annoyed by it. I always used to tell people that reviewed for us that the most important thing to remember when they see a show is that they didn't put this up just to annoy you. And even though it sometimes feels that way, it didn't. And it's really important to just be accepting and listen and hear and not want it to be different than what it is, but just let it be what it is and then faithfully report back what you heard. And that took a long time to learn, but it's really important.
Yeah. I always say as a writer, to be a really good writer, I think you have to be a good audience member.
That's true.
And it's just going and being open to other writers' voices, being appreciative of their work, trying not to get bogged down in things like jealousy or, you know, envy, which is a little difficult to do when you're dealing with creative egos. But I find that the more theater I see, the more I learn, and the more open I am to different types of theater. So I totally agree with you on that.
I agree with you. You're well put.
Thank you. As an executive director of a theater support organization, what messages and themes do you strive to convey to audiences through the projects that you choose?
Well, basically, I think it's been a pretty consistent message since we started NYTheater.com and then through the books that we published and now through Indie Theater Now, which is kind of what you were talking about, which is to embrace as much of different kinds of theater as you can. We have such a mentality of, that we only, with the awards mentality and the winning mentality, that I only want to see, like, Hamilton because that's, like, the show, mm-hmm. And while Hamilton is a lovely show and we're seeing, it's not the only show. And you don't want to limit yourself to just like the trendy thing or the popular thing. And so we've always tried very hard to champion lots and lots of stuff to bring the voices that we don't often hear to the fore, because they have so much to teach us and so much to say. And so that's why we, the focus on indie theater, first of all, is just, naturally sort of bringing to the fore people who otherwise aren't getting as much attention as they deserve. But within that, trying to focus on as many things as possible. And I'm a kind of person who never really wants to see another production of Shakespeare again, because I've seen every one of the plays, at least once, and there's really no compelling need for me to see them again. I like to see something new. I always want to see or read something different, something I haven't seen before. And, the world keeps changing so fast now. There's lots of stuff that we haven't seen. And that's what needs the attention.
May I make a confession?
Yes.
I don't like Shakespeare.
I don't really like Shakespeare all that much, to tell you the truth. Done well, he's good.
I get a lot of flack for that, but it's... It's I'm working on it, but for me it's very difficult with the schism that happens between the actor reciting the dialogue and me actually translating what they're saying in my head. I think the best Shakespeare shows are the ones where I don't have to do that as much as
there are people that do it very well, and they can make it live. And I see, I mean, the productions that I remember over the years, the ones that just let the story tell itself, let it be what it is, and the story will emerge. I mean, he's certainly a very fine dramatist. There's no question.
Right.
And try to sort of cut through, you know, all those things that must have been hilarious in, you know, 1586, you know, mm-hmm. that don't understand that. You know, and there's no reason for us to put up with that because we don't know what it even means. So we cut through some of that and just get to the heart of the piece. But no, I'm no Shakespeare fan. As I said before, I like new things.
Right. Although I did love going to the Old Globe Theater in London. That was really fun.
That I didn't do, but that would be cool.
It is cool. I think it's the third Old Globe Theater is what the tour guide was saying. And they have like a costume display of costumes that famous actors have worn. And it, while doing the work at the theater, it's really neat. And you're right. Some things I see and I'm like, okay, yeah, I get it. And I'm captivated by it. But most of it, it confuses me. I'm working on that. And I'm working on opera too.
Well, we don't talk about opera.
Okay.
I'm not an opera reviewer.
So. What do you think is an important direction that theater is taking right now? Something new that you like?
Well, it's always so hard to talk about that. But I mean, looking over the last several years, I mean, I can't speak to like what's happening right this minute, but over the last several years, I mean, I think the most, you know, what's interesting is the way that theater is embracing new technology. I mean, I've been seeing I heard about a production, and I think it was in New Mexico, and I don't remember the name of the company, but it's like a site-specific thing in New Mexico that utilizes a lot of current technology that wouldn't have been available even, let's say, 3 or 4 years ago to create a very individual experience for each person that passes through that's a sort of site-specific type of a show. And I think that's probably the most exciting trend. I mean, the advantage theater has over all of the other performance media is that we're in the room together with each other. And theater that exploits that is the theater that's going to continue to be the most successful. I mean, theater that just tries to be a movie or theater that just tells a sort of flat, passive story where the audience just watches, you know, that experience is not that significantly different from watching a television show or a movie. And Lord knows audiences have lost the difference between going to the theater and going to their living room and just eat and talk and carry on anyway. So that's sort of disappointing. But a theater experience that's truly not interactive. I don't mean like a Tony and Tina's Wedding thing where you're sort of forced to like talk to strangers, but a wonderful an engagement that can only happen because we're all in this room together and recognizing that we're all in the room together and that some unique and interesting experience is about to happen to us. That is what I find most exciting.
Well, what's also really cool about that is that it indicates that theater creatives are continually raising the bar.
Yes.
And that theater audiences are becoming a lot more sophisticated and aware of when they're seeing something really new and something really captivating. So I love that observation. I would love to see something like that. I think it was called The Encounter, the one-man show that was here recently where everyone wore headphones. I thought that was just an amazing concept.
Yeah. And there's all kinds of new technologies. I mean, there's, you know, just 3D printing, for example, which I don't know much about except a little bit that I've read. But 3D printing feels to me like a technology that should be transformative for theater design. Because it would allow just all this customized design of props and costumes and masks and things that normally or previously would have been meticulously crafted, you know, at very high cost. And I mean, that's how cool. I mean, how cool that we live in this time. I mean, there's a lot of challenges in this time that we're living in, but we are just facing so much technological change that can be harnessed in the service of the art. And that's wonderful.
Totally. Oh, wow. You actually opened up my mind there to some concepts I had never even heard of. That's terrific. Are there any particular, I know you mentioned Taylor Mapp, but are there any particular playwrights within your organization that you feel exemplify that new vision or direction of theater?
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, there are a few. I mean, we published in the same book that we published Taylor in 2007, we published a play called Lens by a group based out of Toronto and New York. And the group is called Blue Mouth Inc. Mm-hmm. And they create about one new piece every 2 or 3 years. Their work is amazing. If you find out that Blue Mouth is doing a show wherever you are, you must go see it because you will be blown away. Uh-huh. They exemplify this technique more than any company that I'm familiar with, although I know there are others. They're just the one that I know really well. And it's kind of weird because this kind of theater doesn't translate well to publishing, which is what we mostly do nowadays. So it's, you know, trying to capture it in a way, in a textual way, diminishes it, actually, which is unfortunate because, you know, this work is by its nature, and Taylor Mack is like this too. It's got musical elements and it's got other multimedia elements. And, you know, it's not just text. It's not like a play like At the Flash where you can really, you know, obviously absent the performance and other aspects, but still you get the basic idea of At the Flash by reading it. But a lot of these plays are hard to grasp just reading them. So it's, you know, I'm really talking out of two sides of my mouth here. I mean, you know, I love to champion this kind of work, but the people that we mostly publish that are successfully published don't tend to do this kind of stuff because, as I said, this is really hard to publish. I did want to mention just quickly, if I could, sure, another thread, which is that I've been thinking about a lot lately, which is just how many immigrants that we've published. And I guess there's a slight political tinge here, but I think it's really one of the things that I love best about going to the theater is to learn something I don't know anything about. And as a person who's lived all his life in America, I know a lot about living in America, but I know very little about being an immigrant from, say, Romania, which Saviana Stanescu writes about with great precision and clarity, or being an immigrant from Vietnam, which Cui Nguyen writes about, or being an immigrant from Japan, which Chiori Miyagawa writes about. These are all folks that we've published who I'm proud to have published. Chiori also led a group of playwrights to create a project called Dream Acts, which is actually about the Dream Kids. And I think it's wonderful that theater can provide a platform for these people who are newcomers to the country to share their experiences. And it's really important for audiences to embrace it because we need to learn about these experiences. For most of us, the immigrant experience was our grandparents or our great-grandparents. And it's just, you know, mythologized. And people who actually have gone through it, I think it's fascinating to learn about it. And it's not, like I said, I know it feels political in a way, but I really am not meaning to be political. These plays that I'm referencing aren't political in the least. They're just about experiences in America that are worth contemplating. Mm-hmm. And especially when you think about the fact that certainly some of the earliest founders of American musical theater, Victor Herbert and Irving Berlin come to mind, were themselves immigrants. And it wasn't all that long ago. I mean, this is a thread that needs to be followed. I know that I went off a tangent there, but I wanted to bring it up.
I totally agree with you. I think that the theatrical melting pot, so to speak, of talent, it takes the blinders off of audiences.
Yes.
We have a tendency, you know, to see everything through red, white, and blue. And it's important to be able to bring the differences in culture as well as the similarities in culture. And we can do that through the arts. We can take that concept and project it back through what we create onto an audience and edify them.
Yeah. And what you say about similarity, I remember when I was a kid, we saw a touring production, the last one, of Zero Mostel and Fiddler on the Roof. 1976, I think it was. Uh-huh. And I remember reading in the program, they had a section in the program where they talked about all the different international companies that Fiddler on the Roof. And they quoted the Japanese producer who said, "Oh yes, we love Fiddler on the Roof. It's so Japanese." And that's the thing. I mean, where people are more similar than they are different the world over.
That's great. I love that. That's wonderful. Well, we've got about 3 or 4 minutes left, so I'm going to ask you a couple more questions.
Okay.
Now, what do you think every theatrical artist, director, writer, composer, actor, producer, should be doing right now to be relevant and successful in the industry?
They should be doing the thing that matters to them in their heart. And, you know, I guess they also need to probably earn money, which may be a different thing. But if they don't have to worry about that, they should definitely be doing the thing that's in their heart. They should not be worrying about what they think is correct or what they think they're supposed to do. They should know inside themselves what they need to do. You know, it's like the studying the Parker George when Dot says at the end, stop worrying if your vision is new. Let others make that decision. I mean, just do stuff. Move on. Do the things that move you to do something. And then we'll let you know.
I love the line that follows that. They usually do.
Yes, exactly.
I can't tell you how many times. I think I've actually posted that on Facebook before, but that really rings true to a lot of people.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
It's a resonant little line.
Yeah, that's a great lyric. Cool. Well, give our audience all of your social media information, please.
Okay. Well, you can find us at indietheaternow.com. And this is going to be confusing. Indie Theater Now is spelled with an E-R. So it's indietheaternow.com. Uh-huh. That's where you'll find 1,300 plays, including At the Flash by Sean Chandler. Mm-hmm. And you should also look at nytheater.com, which is spelled R-E. I told you it was confusing. So NYTheaterRE.com, which is which has been sort of repurposed in the last couple of months as the NY Theater Indie Archive. It's the place where we're slowly compiling 20 years of theater reviews from all the time that we've been on the internet and bringing them back for people to read and peruse. And so that's a growing archive that I hope people will look at. You should also look at Facebook. You could find me, Martin Denton, or you could look for Indie Theater Now on Facebook, or you could look for NY Theater Archive on Facebook, and you can look for Pound Indie Theater Now on Twitter. And I think that's all the places you can find us.
Is there one certain go-to that people can find all of that on? Can they start with your Facebook page?
Yeah, they could. I mean, actually, I think if they go to Indie Theater Now website, it's really, really simple to find everything because it's all right there on the front page. So that's probably the best place to start.
Cool. That's excellent. Martin, you have been like such a wonderful, eloquent, enlightening guest. I mean, I've learned so much today, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being our guest. You've just been wonderful.
Well, thank you. You've been wonderful, too. You're so well organized. Oh. And that makes it really easy to do this. Can I throw one more link at you before we stop?
Absolutely. Yes.
NYTE.org, which is our company website. That actually is a good place to start, too, because that takes you everywhere we are. So.
Excellent. Cool. Well, it's like I said, you're omnipotent. You're everywhere. You're everywhere all the time. I thought I was everywhere all the time, but then I meet someone like you and you just – you set the standard, my friend.
Well, that's really nice of you to say. I don't think that's true, but I appreciate it.
Well, that's because you're a humble man, and which is a very nice quality, by the way. Okay, folks, well, we're about ready to wrap up here. I would like to give some shout-outs to shows that I've really enjoyed and recommend, and I want to give a shout-out to a show by a wonderful up-and-coming writer, sensational writer by the name of Max Vernon, who wrote the book, the music, and the lyrics. That's all of it. He wrote the entire thing. That's crazy. Two, a new musical called The View Upstairs. Now, The View Upstairs was a finalist in the Pride Films and Plays Great Gay Play and Musical Contest. This is a contest that our play At the Flash won, so I don't like to brag on myself. I try to be humble, too. And we won in 2012, and ever since I've been a part of the Writers Network, which has been a wonderful resource for all the writers to get together and help each other. And I was one of the readers and judges for the Great Gay Play Musical Contest in 2014, and I read this and I scored it perfect scores. It is a wonderful, wonderful new show. And it's the story of the Upstairs Lounge, which is a gay bar in New Orleans that caught fire in 1973. And the majority of the patrons were trapped in the bar while it burned. It's sad, but it's such a wonderful, uplifting musical. It entertains, it educates, and it uplifts the audience in such a terrific way. It is playing at the Lynn Redgrave Theater, which I'd never been to. It's a great theater, at 45 Bleecker Street, and it runs until May 21st. So get your tickets. It's just a wonderful show, and he is a great guy. Also, I want to make mention, my musical co-writer, Leo Schwartz, and one of his other book writers, DC Cathro, who's a good friend of mine, they wrote a great musical called Till. It's the story, it's a story based on the true story of Emmett Till, who was a young African-American boy who was horribly murdered, and it was all because of the fact that they claimed that he was flirting with a white lady who has recently retracted her story, but that's a whole other thing. Anyways, Till is having a free reading in Chicago at the new Pride Arts Center, which is Pride Films and Plays' new facility that they purchased. And if you are interested in seeing this, and I encourage you to, please go to the Till Musical Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/Till the Musical. It is actually this coming Monday, February 27th at 7:30 p.m. It's a beautiful musical. I've read it. I've heard the songs. I love it. It's uplifting. Well, folks, the proverbial 11 o'clock number has been sung and the bows have been taken, so it's time to lower the curtain on your program as your ticket. I'd like to thank our guest, the awesome and amazing Martin Denton. And if you'd like for me to give a shout-out to a show in your area or a mention of your organization, go to my Facebook page at facebook.com/yourprogramisyourticket. Give it a like and shoot me a message, and I'll be happy to give you the mention. Folks, take a little time to see a show this week. And don't forget, give a smaller show some love. There's lots of theater gems out there. And so we say goodnight, theater people, and curtain.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.